Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. With me, Alistair Beckett-King.
And me, James Shakeshaft.
Now, James, you like pirates, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, desert islands.
Sure, I love them.
Sun.
Hmm?
Gold doubloons.
Favourite kind of doubloon.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this story has none of those things because it is set in the Scottish Highlands.
Oh.
But don't panic.
Huh?
It does offer grand theft cattle, three spotted trout,
ooh,
at least minimum three.
Nice.
And a case of meowtony. Meowton, that's going to make more sense in a minute.
I hope so.
Come with me, James.
Yes.
To Argyll and Bute for Cuthbert Bead and the Kelpies of Kintyre. Hello there, James.
Hello, Alistair. There.
Hello here. And there.
And everywhere.
We'll
most
see.
Places. Most, a lot of places.
Yeah, I am most places, yes. Mm. You might be aware that I was up in the old Scotland.
It's one of the places.
Not long
right?
ago. It is one of the places I've been. I was in the Scottish Highlands in Argyll. Did you know? I don't know how this didn't come up when we did the Well of the Seven Heads episode. Where
well
we were talking about Loch Oich near Glengarry.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big fissure that runs through the Highlands of Scotland from Inverness to Fort William. You know, there's Loch Linnhe on the southwest side and there's Loch Ness in the northeast. Everyone knows this, right? Well, bang in the middle. Do you know what that loch's called?
Loch my gate.
It's called Loch Lochy. It's just a little lochy loch. They really ran out of names for lochs.
That's was that
the
named by a phone-in vote or something? Lochy McLochface.
So that's not quite where my story takes place today.
Mm.
But I noticed it, so I thought I'd tell you.
Nice.
I'd like to take you to Kintyre to tell you the tales of the Kelpies of Kintyre.
Ooh, Kintyre as in Mull of Kintyre.
As in the Mull of Kintyre, which is, just to clear things up, the Mull of Kintyre is a little bit right at the end of Kintyre, which is a peninsula, not to be confused with the Isle of Mull, which is just a completely different island. It's quite nearby, but not as near as you would expect.
I love a mull as well.
You like a mull?
Yeah, just having a sit and a bit of a stare at the wall.
Just think, I think it's Gaelic for like bald or bare, because like, you know, there's not a lot of trees on some of these windswept isles. The stories I'm going to tell you come from a collection by Cuthbert Bead, which is a name that immediately raised a flag for me because it's sort of suspiciously familiar. Like it's a kind of name where I might suspect that a listener had created a fake sort of lawmen bait book. Like it may as well have been called Kenelm Popper Baylis. I'm sure I've heard those names before. Those are two famous saints from Durham. So I looked into it, and of course Cuthbert Bede is the pen name of the writer Edward Bradley, which he adopted while he was at Durham University.
Oh.
So we're not being trolled. Real guy, fake name. Just a coincidence.
Mm.
But it caught my eye, James. Let me tell you.
Naturally occurring clickbait.
The book is called Argyll's Highlands. It was published in 1902, around 30 years, I think, after the author's death. Most of the stories take place in Kintyre, which is a peninsula. It means headland. And it's, you know, the way Homer Simpson describes Florida as America's Wang? It's got a very similar vibe, although dressed to the left.
Right.
Rather than the right. Are you familiar with the Mull of Kintyre test?
If two mulls talk about, do they have a conversation with each other?
Yeah, it's the Scottish version of the Bechdel test. Yeah,
right.
I pronounce Bechdel there. I'm so concentrating on trying to pronounce Scottish things correctly. I pronounced it Bechdel.
Bechdel.
Like it's Loch, like Loch Lochy. The Mull of Kintyre test is supposedly, I don't think there's any evidence for this, but supposedly the BBFC, which is the British Board of Film Classification. Mm-hmm. So they're the people who put your certificates on your films, your PGs.
Your 12 A's.
Your 12 A's, yeah. Those folks. So if you look at a picture of the Mull of Kintyre, it does have a sort of a pendulous quality to it.
Not quite peninsula, sort of taking the N out. The second N.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
an N and a Euler are irrelevant. Mm. We could take those right out. And the Mull of Kintyre test was the sort of the upper limit. If the appendage in question were above the angle of Kintyre, that was not acceptable. But below that angle, supposedly, was acceptable
for
getting the old stamp of approval from the BBFC.
Sort of related to this, you know. I think it was like a couple of months ago, there was like a thing going around about like, actually Edinburgh is way more westerly than like Cornwall or something. You don't really realize.
Edinburgh is more westerly than Cornwall.
Something like that. Yeah.
Really? That isn't true though, is it?
I think it is though.
Is it?
Or it's more westerly than Bristol.
You're right. You're right, Edinburgh is more westerly than Bristol.
That's it, is Bristol,
and
yeah.
And less westerly than Cornwall. But still, I'm impressed by it, because the country leans.
Yes.
So in my head, it doesn't lean.
Does the mull angle take into account this?
That is a really good point, actually, yeah, because if I tilt my head, that's a much steeper angle.
That is offensive.
It must be based on a normal hanging of the map, surely. Surely, James.
Okay.
Wow.
So...
Kintyre is a rocky but sexy peninsula with islands either side of it. Isla and Jura to the west and Arran and Bute to the east, as well as just tons of other little islands.
Mm.
It's got some lovely place names. Witchburn, Grogport, Tangy.
Oh.
Knocknahar.
Oh, very nice.
Which I think is a cartographer being surprised in the middle of naming Knocknahar. Or suddenly realising something.
Yeah. Locky lock.
We had to run out, so we just named some locks quite quickly after that. And the book, from what I can tell, it is mostly tales of piracy and clan warfare, centering almost exclusively around the theft of cattle, sometimes sheep, and on one occasion a goat.
Oh.
When you think of piracy, you tend to think of doubloons and parrots and cool stuff, but it's like a much drabber, more sort of tartan, oat-fueled and cow-focused form of piracy.
It would have to be a really big treasure chest.
To get all those cows in it, yeah.
Yeah, to get cows in.
But it does seem like for a few hundred years, the different clans were essentially shuffling the same few cows back and forth from different islands and, you know, stabbing each other a little bit as they went. Not a safe place at all. The first story I'm going to tell you is the House of Thieves.
Ooh.
Mm. And this begins, as Cuthbert Bede writes, in the dark mental days of Scotland, when the law was defective and void of sufficient energy.
Are you sure this wasn't written by me in the late 90s?
It was radical.
It was dark.
Oh, hellish. That's what we said in the Northeast.
Things were either dark or safe. I'm now embarrassed about the lack of imagination.
Safe.
Yeah.
Hellish in County Durham. That's
good.
That's a character. Yeah, yeah, that's like a Meatloaf album cover.
Yeah. And that was for bad things, right?
No good. Yeah, it's like
when
kids today say hellish, they mean good. I was like, oh, that was hellish. If someone did a trick on a skateboard, I don't know. I wasn't really invited to those sorts of events.
They probably did a really good yo-yo trick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If
someone walked the dog, you'd be like, oh, hellish. If someone got Shimano gears on their bike. Oof. Oh, hellish.
I suppose,
Do you remember Shimano gears? I think it was a full year of my life where that was all anybody was interested in.
They're all Shimano nowadays. It's the main brand of bike gear.
Right, okay. Were they new to the Northeast? Up until that point, you just had to jam some dry leaves into the wheel?
You had to take the wheel off, turn it over. That's a true bit of bike history. To change gears at one point, there were two gears and it was a cog on each side of the wheel. And you had to turn it over.
Let's take the wheel off.
And flip it over.
I mean, what if someone's getting away? That's not ideal.
Mm.
Don't pursue them on a bike in a chase situation.
No.
I favour a milk float myself. So the story of the House of Thieves, as Cuthbert Bede tells it. A traveller, journeying through Kintyre, lost his way on a dark night and wandered on until he perceived a light. He made his way towards it and found it to proceed from a house situated in a locality but seldom visited. He ventured to ask a night's lodging, which was readily granted. He was kindly used, had plenty of fresh beef and mutton set before him, and a warm, comfortable bed furnished him, and the people were affable and kind. The traveller slept well, and in the morning had a good breakfast prepared for him before he set out.
Hmm.
And that's the end of the story.
That sounds lovely. 5 stars.
No, it isn't the end of the story, James. I reeled you in.
Oh, no.
It does sound great. In fact, in a way, you're right. He gives those kind people an excellent review, because the next morning, he's already on his way. The sun's up. It's nice and bright. But who's this in the road in front of him? Three strangers.
Mm-mm.
And they ask him where he lodged the night before. And he says, oh, a little house in the area. And the strangers tell him that house is a house of thieves and robbers.
Oh.
Yeah. And they demand that the traveller show them the way to the house so that they can be arrested. And the traveller refuses.
Oh.
Point blank refuses. Like, you know, like you say, 5 stars. He's like, no, it was good there. And the strangers persist. They say, they are the worst robbers in the country, said one of the men, pulling forth a pistol. And it is necessary that we should apprehend them. If you do not show us the way to the house, we shall think you are in league with them, and we must take you prisoner. And the traveller said, then you may take me, for I will never betray men whose bread I have eaten.
Oh, okay.
And the strangers said, basically, you've passed the test.
Oh, it was an elaborate double bluff.
I'm very glad you said that, said the stranger, because actually, we are the robbers who you stayed with last night.
See?
You have saved your life. If you had betrayed us, we should have shot you dead. We are the robbers at whose house you lodged last night, and we have met you here in order to try you whether you had evil intentions against us, this being the easiest way of dealing with that situation that we could think of.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, I can think of an easier way.
What would you do, James?
If I was the robbers in the House of Thieves...
What would you do?
I would say, no, sorry, we're full tonight.
Oh, that's quite good.
Just simply not let him in.
Simply not let him in. What about if you let him in and then put him to the test in the morning? That seems...
What would my test
a little
be?
Bit more convenient. The test is... You quickly run ahead, but down a different glen, I imagine.
Yeah.
And then you pop out on the road and really hope that he doesn't recognise you from the day before.
Well, what I've done is I've got...
Or that morning.
I'm a thief. I've got a reversible kilt.
That's really smart. Mm. Yeah. With like poppers, probably. So you can just like...
Yeah, and swip it around.
Straight back on. And they'll be like, this is clearly a different clansman.
This is the reverse of the tartan you were looking at earlier. It's obviously it's clearly a different tartan.
Yeah, a bit of a weird line in Star Wars, that.
Please move along.
So he was all right. He got away. You have proved yourself an honest man, and now you can go on your way in safety.
Mm.
So it was a dangerous land, but not if you were honest. Although several people who are honest did die. So, you know, your mileage may vary.
What's more honest?
Honestly sticking up for the robbers who are nice to you.
If I was trying to catch a robber's house, you wouldn't come in with going, hey, I'm going to arrest and probably kill some people. Do you know where they are? You'd just go, anyone know where to get a great breakfast around here?
I'm honestly not sure that would work for catching robbers either.
Well, then it
gets either of those are viable robber catching strategies.
Oh, I had it in there. It was this house down the road. That's the House of Thieves, you mug.
You're dead. Now, according to Cuthbert Bede, one stormy, rainsome night in Kintyre, a man named David Fisher met up with his lover, Jean McCallum, and basically all the Hepcats were there. Gersey Ferguson, Tam Neal, Daft Watty the Piper.
What?
Et al. And while they were all drying out around a peat fire, they told stories of magic and adventure, one of which was the story of the water kelpie.
Oh.
Or, I'm trying to say it in Gaelic, Iach Uishke. So that's horse water. So Iach is horse and Uishke is water.
Right.
Uishke like whizge.
Uishke.
Like whiskey.
It's like saying whiskey, but when you've just had a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah.
What have you been drinking? Uishke.
Uishke. U-I-S-G-E. Uishke. And Kelpie, as I think Kelpies have come up in the podcast before. They're a kind of Scottish fairy slash horse. So according to Cuthbert Bede, the fairies always had a great taste for beauty in mortals and were ever on the lookout for lovely girls.
Mm.
Which is, I don't think we would approve of the Kelpie's behaviour in this story these days, but it literally was a different time and also imaginary. So two things were different. So Jean sang a song in Gaelic, which tells the story of a water kelpie.
It wasn't a Gaelic version of, he drinks a uishke drink, he drinks a wodka drink. Shearing. Who's that again? What are they called?
Was it Chumbawamba?
Yes.
It was Chumbawamba.
Which is someone saying Chewits when they've just had a full packet of Chewits.
So a water kelpie spotted a lovely girl, a beauteous maiden walking along the seashore, according to Cuthbert Bede, and immediately fell in love. And he invited her down to his watery palace beneath the waves. And asked her to be his wife. And she was, frankly, a little bit curious. And so she let him take her under the waves and show the palace. And she was like, yeah, it's fine, but I want to go home. But he was like, well, you said you were going to be my wife. And she thought, I don't know if I really want to be married to a sort of a horse fairy who lives underwater.
Mm.
And so she came up with a little scheme. She said, oh, of course, I do want to stay here, but I need my spinning wheel.
And my snorkel.
And she was also thinking in her head, and also I've kind of got a boyfriend on the land, sort of a human boyfriend with legs and stuff. So he said, can I just pop back and get my spinning wheel? And he said, yeah, of course. And he let her go. He carried her up through the waves and placed her safely on the seashore. And there she was found by her lover, lying in a swoon.
Mm.
He took her to her home, and when she had recovered, she told him what had happened. He would not at first believe that she had really seen a water kelpie, but he afterwards believed it, for when she was his wife, every morning they found three spotted trout placed just outside their door, ready for their breakfast. It was the gift of the water kelpie, who had not forgotten his love for the maiden.
A bit of a
sad
sweet
ending there.
Sweet.
Yeah, okay.
Is that
sweet? Well, is it? It depends how much you like fish, I suppose. They've got basically one move, water kelpies, and that is giving you fish. That is not the last time a kelpie's going to give someone fish.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. That's their move.
Is it like chow? Like, it means hello and goodbye?
It's extremely flexible, yes.
Mm. Like hellish, it means good or bad.
It means good or bad if you're in the Northeast. So after Jeannie had told the story of the water kelpie, David Fisher chipped in with the story of the shipwrecked cat. It would be more accurate to say the shipwrecked cat and the shipwrecked ship and also David, because there were several people on that boat.
Ah.
David Fisher himself was a mate of a ship called the St. Mungo, sailing out of Glasgow under the direction of Captain Keir, travelling from London to Montreal. Now, I think I might have a bit of an idea for a political joke here, James, so,
go on.
So get ready. Mm-hmm. If it had been Captain Keir Starmer, the boat would have kept going to the right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Fun fact, Mungo's Hugh Grant's middle name.
Is it?
Mm.
Hugh Mungo
so
Grant?
So he's called Hugh Mungo, which is great.
Nobody with the first name Hugh can have the middle name Mungo. Hugh Mungo?
Yeah.
Is what? What's it? Did he gain his powers in an accident? What what kind of a name is that? Hugh Mungo. Cancel the rest of the episode. I just need time to deal with that.
I'm checking on Snopes. It's mostly true.
How can it be mostly true? It's mostly true?
It's Hugh John Mungo Grant.
Wow.
But then that still says Hugh John. He's got a Hugh John.
That's why they call him Mull of Kintyre. So David was on his way. This really changes everything, this information about Hugh Grant. He was on his way to Montreal, and they had reached latitude 46 degrees north, longitude 34 degrees west. I'm sure you know it well.
46 west? 46 north?
46 degrees north, 34 degrees west. Don't look for it. It's the sea. There's nothing there. It's pretty much bang in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Are you Googling to see where it is?
No, I can imagine the sea.
I feel like I can hear the sound of you Googling. It's the sea, James. Just trust me, it's the sea. There's no land there.
Did you mean the sea, the sea?
The sea, it's the sea, the sea. Never has the sea been more the sea than it is at 46 degrees north, 34 degrees west. And they came upon an abandoned ship, seemingly, the Rinaldo. And that boat was supposed to be sailing from Quebec to Antwerp, but it had been abandoned by its crew. With, I think, 700 tons of timber in the hold, just because of a little bit of sinking.
But it's got timber full of wood.
It's got a lot of wood and wood floats. So the boat's still, it's still floating, but it is, let's be honest, currently sinking. It's taking on quite a lot of water. But 700 tons of timber, James, that, you know, oh, cha-ching.
Like,
you can't just leave that in 46 degrees north, 34 degrees west to sink. And also, I told you the ship was abandoned. It wasn't abandoned. It was abandoned apart from a cat. Who presumably was by default the captain.
Yeah, Captain Cat.
Captain Cat. And according to David, it has often happened that when a vessel has been abandoned by her crew, a live canary, hen or cat has been found on board, which has saved the vessel from being condemned as a derelict. So apparently they deliberately left an animal there, sort of vaguely in charge, but with no real powers.
Because it's a cat. Well, that's what the cats want you to think. They're actually just like mass murdering sailors.
Yeah. Yeah, basically it was the Demeter, but the cat had eaten them too fast. So they were barely out of Quebec before nobody left.
Is the thing.
It's the thing from the thing.
It's the thing from the thing. That's not me not remembering something for once.
That is a really easy film for people with bad memories.
I think my nan must have been on about it all the time.
A lot of actors she recognises from that film. That's what's his name out of the thing.
Yes, it is Kurt Russell.
So David, very bravely, along with four of his crewmates, stepped up and volunteered to try and sail the sinking Rinaldo back to Scotland towards the Clyde, presumably to weigh anchor in Glasgow.
Did they still have to take orders from the cat?
I believe the cat was more of a ceremonial position by this point, but they took the cat with them.
No, that's nice.
I think you might have been more generous to have popped that aboard the St. Mungo, but they took it with them, I guess, because he was the captain. Davey says that the weather proved foul and the leakage of the waterlogged vessel was so great that for 22 hours out of the 24, we were kept working at the pumps. But we toiled on manfully for 18 days and at length sighted Cape Clear. Now, I looked this up to see how near to the Clyde that is. That is the bottom of Ireland. That's a little island off the bottom of Ireland, as far as I can tell. So they're quite far away from Scotland. There's an island in the way. And Northern Ireland. Don't want to be controversial. So they should have landed there. They should have just put into the first port they came to, but the wind turned against them, James, and blew them back out to sea, and they drifted around the northern coast of Ireland and into the Northern Channel, which is the bit between Northern Ireland and the Highlands of Scotland. We came towards the Mull, which I think means the Isle of Mull, but it could mean the Mull of Kintyre. Not sure. And it seemed as though we must be dashed to pieces on the rocks, but a sweep of the gale bore us away from the coast, and we rounded the Mull in safety. As we drifted on to Sander, which is another island, there came a lull in the gale, and curiously enough, this calm probably proved to be our destruction, for if the strong breeze had kept up, I think we should have weathered the rocks and should have passed on safely into the sheltered waters of the Kilbrannan Sound or the Firth of Clyde. But the wind stopped, and the ship, ka-chow, crashed into the rocks at the pretty much bang on the tip of Kintyre. Near Carsky. Yeah, right on the tip.
Ouch.
The Rinaldo broke up on the rocks. David's four crewmen were clinging to a log when they were swept out to sea and he never saw them again.
Oh, no. That's like end of Last Crusade. Should have let go of the logs. Shouldn't have been so greedy for the logs.
It's like a polyamorous Titanic where there's four of them. I'm like, it is quite a small log, actually. Fair enough. Four seems a lot. On the night of the wreck, the cat seemed fully alive to the danger because he was the captain.
You don't get to become a cat captain, not being alive to danger.
He kept close to me, carefully watching my movements. When the hull smashed up and I leapt upon the floating log, the cat sprang up on my neck and there clung for life.
Ooh.
During the 5 hours that I was battling with the waves, she kept her position, and when, for the third time, I was flung on the rocks and sank exhausted, she then probably had leapt ashore. There was a great confusion on shore at that moment, for the lifeboat, which had been brought from Campbelltown, was just being launched. My cat got away unnoticed, and I was afraid I should never see her again. But the next day, when I was awaking from my sleep, I felt something purring and rubbing around my face, and opened my eyes, there was my poor cat. In some way, she had traced me to Leffenstrath. And she stayed with him there for 3 days, and she followed him to Glasgow, and later to Demerara, and finally ended up in the possession of David's girlfriend, Jean McCallum. Isn't that sweet?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. The cat survived. Those four guys, dead.
Yes, they should have grabbed onto that guy's neck.
700 tons of timber, that's gone. You're not seeing that again.
Matchsticks.
Basically, what they did was they found a cat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and then five men risked their lives, four of them dying, to bring that cat to Scotland.
It's a good cat, yeah.
But of course,
what?
Cat drownings are not the only danger the sea presents. There are, of course, kelpies around, and I have one more kelpie for you.
Oh, yeah.
Before I pack my stories away.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have the story of the son of a kelpie.
Son of a kelpie?
So the name of somebody who is the lover of a kelpie is Lianan Shi. It means a fairy lover, basically. Somebody
this is a generic title.
Yep, absolutely. It's not a single person. It's someone who loves a fairy.
Ah.
So had the woman from the first story stayed under the ocean,
yes,
we might have called her a Lianan Shi.
Oh.
But she escaped due to a clever story about a spinning wheel.
So does Lian mean fairy or Lian mean lover?
She, or S-I-T-H, Sith, we might say. Sheath means fairy.
Ah, the Sith.
Like in your Star Wars program, James.
That George Lucas. What a cheeky so-and-so.
Yeah. She or she. I'm trying my best to do the pronunciation correctly. Mm. So there was a kelpie in an inland lake in the Western Highlands who fell in love with yet another beauteous maiden.
Hmm.
After which she started to feel a bit weird about it because he was sort of a magical fairy child, and she really wasn't keen on raising the fairy, and she tried to give it to the kelpie, saying maybe you should bring him up because he's quite weird. And he said to her, "Maiden decked with auburn tresses, take thy son to thy embraces, and each morning whilst I live, spotted trout to thee I'll give."
Oh, hello.
Yeah. And she was like, "Fair enough, I'll keep him then, as long as you're paying this sort of trout child support on a daily basis." He doesn't say how many trout, but we can only assume 3.
Mm.
Seems like the correct number of trout.
Yeah.
So the child, it was known as the fairy man, or, now this is a tricky one, I would have pronounced it Dove Sith, D-U-B-H hyphen S-I-T-H, but as far as I can tell, you don't pronounce the ends of the words. So I think the Gaelic for the ferryman, or I think it means black fairy, literally, or dark fairy. I think the correct Gaelic pronunciation will be something like douchey.
Oh.
Mm. And you know what? He was. This little kid grew up to be nothing but trouble.
Oh, really? Oh.
Mm. The douchey or ferryman grew up to be something of a magician and an archer. He even got himself involved in some actual history.
Ah.
The Battle of Trigrunyart.
Right.
Or Grunyart Strand, which was, to be honest, yet another fight between two people who were probably, I think, uncle and nephew. You know what clans are like.
Mm.
It's basically like The Sopranos, but in tartan.
Mm. Yeah, less shell suits.
Porridge instead of gabagool.
Mm.
Probably. So I won't go into full detail. I won't do like 6 seasons of backstory on this fight, but I'll give you just the bit that involves the douche. And this is Ara Fletcher's version of the story as written up by Ron on Islay.scot, which is a website dedicated to the stories of the Isle of Islay. Apparently, Lachlan Moore MacLean of Duart Castle and his nephew, James MacDonald of Islay, had a bust-up over a small personal matter. Can you imagine what that was?
Probably some cattle.
It was the theft of some cattle. Yes,
cattle-related.
It started out, it was yet again another example of cattle-related violence. I think it started out with a few cows, but then over months and years, there's a little bit of land, I think, also on Islay, maybe a castle here and there.
Mm.
After a while, nephews, uncles, dozens of loyal men are being murdered left and right. Much presumably to the bemusement of the cows in question. Finally, it came to a head with a battle on the Isle of Islay in Trigrunyart.
Mm.
And the douche, magician and archer, offered to help. The big guy, Lachlan Moore MacLean.
MacLean.
Well, you're about to say actually less, quite a lot less MacLean.
Oh, no.
He's about to make a really big mistake. The douche offers, I could fight on your side in this battle. And basically Lachlan MacLean says, no, because you're like a horrible little magic man who nobody likes. So get lost.
Oh, no.
And he would live to regret that, but not for long. So basically the douche switched sides. And this is how Ron writes up the story. The hot August sun was blazing down on the fighting men, And during a lull in the battle, McLean wanted a drink. And as his water carrier was empty, I assume water carrier is like a flask, not a person.
Mm-hmm.
He crossed over to the well. Removing his helmet, he knelt to drink.
Oh, dear.
James, you and I, we've seen films. He hasn't seen Saving Private Ryan. He hasn't seen any films. He doesn't know that the very instant you remove your helmet.
Yeah.
He doesn't know, James. This was the moment Dushi had waited for. And like lightning, he shot the bolt from his crossbow straight into the back of McLean's neck. Oh. At such an angle that the tip came out his eye.
Ow.
Yeah, pretty Ooh. Nasty. Which is not exactly how Cuthbert Bede tells the story, but the gist of it is the same. That the Dushi struck the decisive blow in that battle and tipped things in favour of Jimmy McDonald. of honor. And so those, I should say, are Cuthbert Bede's stories, and that is the end of my stories of the Kelpies of Kintyre.
Oh, that was a lovely set of stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you care to score?
Yes, yes.
Okay, let's go for it. My first category will be names.
Now, you did sneak in an early name just for the...
An early name?
There was one name that you were just like, oh, Loch Lochy exists, by the way. I just dropped
a Loch Lochy in at the top.
It was a lovely name. And could you please remind me of the names of the people at that party? I just want to hear them again.
Of course. They were Gene McCallum, Gersey Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Tam Neill and Daft Watty the Piper.
Daft Watty the Piper.
As well as David Fisher.
Of course, David Fisher was present.
David Fisher also present. Boring name.
Daft Watty the Piper. And
yeah.
Then there was that douchey kid.
The douchey. I mean, look, it's no Lucius Douches. He's never going to be the douchiest character we've met on the podcast.
Or the Luciest.
Well, neither the Luciest nor the Douchiest. But the Douchey, that is a good name.
So, yes, big time.
And Grogport, Tangy and Knocknahar.
Five.
Thank you.
Can't fault
Thank
them.
You. Thank you. I'll take my five. Thank you. My next category is, and I've got a weird feeling about this, so I think you're going to try and knock me down, but supernatural.
Right. Yes.
So Kelpies are supernatural. And also, cats are supernatural.
I'm not sure.
Timber is supernatural. Like an abandoned ship is spooky, though, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Never seen one in real life, but I imagine it would be. I imagine I'd not want to get on it.
Wait, do you not believe in abandoned ships, James?
Oh, yeah.
I believe in them when I see them.
I believe some people think they see abandoned ships.
You're not exactly a nautical fellow, though, James.
I've been on a ship. I've been in a dry dock.
Okay. I didn't mean to impugn your knowledge of maritime matters.
Wait, the thing about the Kelpies, are they horses or are they people?
Great question.
Or are they centaurs? Are they seahorses?
They cannot be seahorses and reasonably expect to carry on a romantic relationship with a human woman. Come on, lads. Surely not. It's not feasible. Especially since seahorses house baby seahorses. The male seahorse has their babies in a little pouch.
Yeah.
That's not going to work with a human baby.
No, you kind of have a bunch of human babies.
Not practical.
In a bum bag.
No. Couldn't happen. No, impossible. So, yeah, Iach is the Gaelic word for horse. So they are horses, but also they're sort of not horses sometimes.
Depends if they're trying to woo the ladies or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they clean up nice. And the douchey did look pretty much like a normal person.
Douchey one. Yeah, it's not very supernatural, I'm afraid, Alistair.
It is very supernatural. There's two Kelpies.
Well, I'll give you one per Kelpies. So it's two. And then there was just a cat.
What about the fairy? What about the ferryman? But the ferryman's also magical. It's not clear how. He's good at archery. All right.
Two. Sticking at two.
Yeah. All right. We did well in names. Mm-hmm. That's fine. My next category is, it's The Thing from John Carpenter's The Thing.
Excellent.
I'm not quite sure. I don't think it's going to be a high scoring category, but too cool a title not to try.
It's an homage to It's It from Stephen King's It.
An homage to, I think, one of the worst categories you've ever come up with.
The lowest scoring category.
And used twice.
Yes, over two episodes.
You, you'd probably be very inclined to give me a high score if I were to do an homage to it. But the cat on the boat is a little bit...
John Carpenter's the thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm imitating it almost convincingly.
The cat on the boat's a dog on a helicopter. I know the dog wasn't
a dog on a helicopter.
But it was near a helicopter.
No, I'm pretty certain the dog was on the helicopter and it was chasing a Norwegian man.
Is that why it crashed?
The Norwegian had to run after it, warning them, watch out, there's a dog in that helicopter. It's a really weird, confusing film.
It's a very bad dog.
Yeah. What's that? That dog isn't a trained pilot. He's shouting, but it's in Norwegian, so the Americans don't understand. But also, Kelpies, they seem to be shapeshifters. You said it yourself. Sometimes they're horses, sometimes they're not. The Thing from John Carpenter's The Thing is a shapeshifter.
That is the thing about The Thing from John Carpenter's The Thing. It is that it's a shapeshifter.
The Thing is a remake of the film The Thing. From outer space, I think.
Mm.
Where in that, it's a vegetable that represents communism, I think. You can really make anything a film in those days.
About communism. They could make about communism.
It's about a beach ball that eats cats, but the beach ball represents communism. And they were like, here's $1 million, which is a lot of money in those days, i.e. now. Off you go, lads.
They should have done the aliens thing, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should have.
The Thing, and then the Things, which is less scary.
I think it goes
sounding.
Thing, and then Thingies, and then Thingamajigs.
And then the series tails off when it's just called Wasp Names.
Yeah, Thingamajig versus Wasp Name. Nobody likes
Doodah. Thingamajig versus Wasp Name. Whoever wins, summit, summit, summer.
Easy to write, though. You've got to give them... The screenwriters did save a lot of time there.
They just got a bunch of nanas in.
But the stormy night in Kintyre.
Yeah.
You know, they're all trapped inside. Oh,
I think I'm inclined to give
Daft Watty's there. If it is even the real Daft Watty, it's kind of spooky.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go for a 4 because I like the film The Thing.
Great. I'm happy. I'll accept it whether I've earned it or not.
Mm.
For my final category, I know you were quite impressed by that little bit of satirical wordplay I did earlier.
Oh, yes.
So get ready to make an effort to enjoy this in a similar manner. Fishy Tales. Fishy Tales, James.
Fishy Tales.
Fishy, because there were quite a lot of fish in the stories.
Oh, and it's a bit fishy, like, I'm not sure it's true.
Yeah, you're getting it, yes.
I see.
So we've had minimum 3 or 4 fish a day.
Probably yes.
6 fish a day.
Multi.
A day.
Mm.
Multi-fish.
That's a lot of fish.
There's loads of fish.
Where do you get all these spotted trout from?
Mm. Can't tell you. I know a guy, if he is a guy. I'm not sure that all of these stories happen. I don't know. David Fisher's story sounds a little outlandish. I feel like... He might have exaggerated a bit.
About the cat?
He might have beefed it up a little. He might have beefed up the cat a little bit, yes. Just a little bit to make it more exciting.
Mm.
Maybe these stories of the traveller and the...
Yeah, the Airbnb.
The Airbnb assassins.
And that stinks.
Mm-hmm. And what else stinks? Then. Fish does.
Bad fish. You're right. This is a bunch of fishy tales. Yeah, 5. Got to do it.
Oh, 5.
Got to do it.
All right, you do it. Okay.
It's very incredibly fishy.
Yeah, what
on many levels.
I just didn't expect it, frankly, and you sort of caught me off guard.
Also, you had at least 6 fish to actual fish tails in there because they were giving out 3 fish.
The fish,
a day,
the tails twice. Of the fish. Yeah. So it is 5 actually. I'm gonna stop apologising. I'm gonna take up space. I'm gonna defeat my imposter syndrome and collect that 5. Cha-ching! Thank you very much. In the bank.
You pop it in the fish bank.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you very much, James. You've given me fine food and a delicious breakfast.
Yeah, don't you dare tell anyone where I live.
Your secret's safe with me. I'd literally die before giving you a bad review on Yelp. Meowtiny like it because the cat was in charge, James.
Did that
click into play? Okay.
Okay.
Hey, James, it just so happens that old Cuthbert Bede has a couple of Halloween-based titbits in that selfsame book.
Ooh. Argyle's Highlands.
Yeah.
Hey, are we doing some kind of Halloween show, the Lord Boys?
Yes, yes, we are.
You don't say. What? What an extraordinary coincidence.
Part of the Cheerful Earful Podcast Festival on the 31st of October,
2023.
In Balham, and you can buy tickets online.
Well, I hope people do buy tickets, actually. And I might share those Halloween tales then.
Mm, please do.
Well, I will.
Oh, yeah.
And they made a TV series. Is that the TV series that was a remake? They were like, what if the thing had CGI instead of puppets? And everyone went, it will be, we wouldn't like that.